Go.
All right, here we are.
Was that your opening?
Oh, we are actually recording out there, yeah, or just streaming?
No, I'm streaming, and then I start recording.
Oh, well then. I look stupid now. Hello, everyone. I wasn't paying enough attention, but here we are now. It's time to answer your questions, and also ask some questions. It's Week the Monger Recaps Q&A episode for March of 2018. I was paying no attention. It's okay, though.
That's fine. We don't need to pay attention, Nick. Where we're going, Nick, we don't need roads.
I'm not sure that's precisely applicable, but okay.
Didn't, like, Jefferson say that?
No.
Was that Lincoln?
No.
That was, like, that was part of Manifest Destiny, where we're going, we don't need roads?
No, it was not.
Hold on, roads weren't invented yet.
That Roosevelt? Is not accurate.
Is it not inaccurate?
What?
I'm smart, Nick. That's what I'm trying to say. I'm dropping those smart references on you.
If that's what you believe, okay.
I do. We're going to be talking about some questions and some answers. And normally, we start this off by reading some of our answers that we got from our viewers. But unfortunately, Nick, I've discovered something very important. When you go on antidepressants, don't accidentally go off of them for a while, because that leads to bad news, which is why a lot of episodes have been delayed for a while. And we just got the last Q&A up, so I wanted to give some people some more time to answer that question that we posed in there, which is, what manga character do you see yourself in? We got a couple answers already, but I wanted to give our listeners some more time to send in their answers. So if you would like to answer that, just send in an email to weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com. Let us know who in the manga world you see yourself in. It could be anybody in the world. Someone's like, I see myself in a zombie. I also like to make my daughter become my master project as I dominate the food culinary world.
Yeah.
It could be anybody. But we do have questions.
I see myself as the girl from Ibitsu, who wants to make people her brothers and then murder them.
Yes. You can't stand anybody else having a little sister.
No.
I've actually always ever referred to my younger sibling as my younger half-sister, because I believe that will keep you from just going out and immediately. You're like, half-sister. Doesn't
I'll
really
just half-murder her.
Yeah. We have questions for each other, though, right?
Yes, yes. I have a great question for you, Chris.
Great one? Okay.
Literally, I thought of this one, and I was like, I should think of something better. I can't. Never mind.
Go for it.
Waffles, pancakes, or French toast?
This is the kind of question that...
Literally, I was like, that's a bad question. I should think of a better one. And I was like, I can't.
This is the kind of question that could really damage a friendship, though, if we say the wrong one.
Mm.
You know, when I was younger, it would have probably been waffles.
Did you have the Eggos when you were a kid?
Yeah, and for some reason, I didn't like French toast. I can't explain to you why. I don't know if I tried it once and didn't like it, or if I just saw it and I was like, ew, French food, that sounds gross, and just never ate it from there. But I've had French toast since then, and I think I enjoy the simplicity. Like, it's not the simplicity of French toast, because it's kind of a complicated dish, but I guess I just like, when I get waffles now, I'm like, oh, well, what do I want on it? Do I want blueberry waffles? Do I want this or that? Like, French toast, I'm like, just give me fucking French toast. So I think I'd say French toast. Plus, I haven't had a good French toast in a while, and now I'm kind of hungry for one. And that's when you're like, wrong! You're supposed to say pancakes!
Sorry.
You all right?
I'm tired.
I was like, are you really judging my answer?
I'm not judging your answer. I think that all three answers are delicious. Yeah.
Gotcha. All right, I have a quick question.
French toast is my preference in general.
There we go. Hey, Nick, we lined up again on a question.
Yeah. It's almost as if we were actually different pod people who were released from the same source.
It's weird. One of us got really good mustache genes, and the other one of us got really, I guess he didn't get anything special. So, just one of us got good mustache genes. I got a question for you, though, Nick. Don't carry your enthusiasm too high, but have you ever had an activity, a hobby, something that you've really wanted to kind of get into for a while, but you didn't have sort of the access to do so, or you didn't maybe have like the community or know anybody around you who'd be able to participate with you that's kind of always kept you, gatekept you from joining in on that hobby or pastime or whatever?
Yeah, I did always think that it would have been, especially when I was younger and more active, I wish that there were some activities that I could get more involved in, you know, like a kind of like, I guess, like, you know, the youth sports kind of things that there was just like, you know, no proper organization to set up because you can't, you know, exactly play football by yourself kind of thing. In my adulthood, yeah, there were some games that I have wished that I had people who were actually, you know, near me so that we could play certain video games together. Like, I especially remember when, New Super Mario Bros. Wii came out. Mm-hmm. I was like, I wish that I had, like, you know, like, friends that I would, that were around me that I could play this with. But I don't have a lot of friends that are actually in the just live in the same area as me anymore because people have kind of spread out to different places and a lot of my friends are online now.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I know that feeling. I've gotten into Magic. My D&D group has. Mm-hmm. And I definitely, we play Magic when we get together as a group, but I've definitely like reached that point now where I'm hankering to like wanting to play it more often. And it's just like, God, I wish I knew more friends that played Magic that I could like, be like, hey, let's play 20 games right now with my one deck I built and can't afford another one. Some good times.
Trading card games are very frustrating. I know exactly what I want to do, but I don't have the money to make it.
Yeah, that's one of the big issues. But I live vicarious through watching Yu-Gi-Oh! Reigns, and I imagine I'm the speed duelist up there on that surfboard thing flying through the data storm.
I will be the pro wrestling duelist.
I just watched another match of his, and he has a heel turn in it, and he puts on a mask and calls himself Dark Onizuka, and at the end, he has a face turn and wins the match.
No, I must embrace the...
It's gloriously stupid. I love that guy. Alright, let's get to some questions then.
Yes, let's do that.
Alright.
I believe that we are starting off on a question from Andrew McKitty.
Yes.
Yes. Do you want me to start this off then?
I could start this one off just since it's Dice Sunk related. Hey, yes. Dother Ruler of Time and Kathleen T.
Names good times, good characters. Times.
Yep. Yeah. As of writing, Season 3 of Dice Funk has just wrapped up, so the obvious question is, who would you choose to make an inevitable manga adaptation of each season of Dice Funk? As a bonus, who would you want for the inevitable Netflix live-action series? Well, this is very tough to talk about, because... I'm trying to think. Season 2... I'm going to go off of what kind of the genres of them were. Season 2 was sort of, in Austin's own words, was heavily inspired by like The Princess Bride and The Wind Waker from Legend of Zelda. So for an adventure kind of series, and since a lot of it took place on boats and going to cool islands, I'd say Odo should draw that one. Plus, it was a lot more about friendship winning out in the end, because none of the player characters became hideous villains by the end of it.
Bad time.
Yeah, that is, yeah, well, we have a trend going now. Season 3 is tough, because I have a tough time trying to explain. I'm going to say Araki should do it, just because there were stands in it, and a lot of weirdness. A lot of, like, cool creepiness and, like, mystery to figure out. I think he'd be good at that. And the current season, though it is only about maybe halfway done or so, is, like, kind of modern saying. I would like to see what Naki or Sawa would do with it. Be kind of cool. So I'll go for that. As a bonus, who would you want for the inevitable live action Netflix series? I don't know. I don't know showrunners as much to be able to really give any kind of depth to that. I'm going to say, please, not the guys who make Marvel shows, because those really drag in the middle. So I don't want that issue. But I don't know. Get the guys who do Narcos. They seem pretty good. I don't know. I'm not good at that. But thank you for your question.
Yeah.
And thank you for listening to Dice Funk.
All right. And next is going to come from Redbane. First off, there I will not read the whole thing, but there is a long rant about how much he hates Sir Night Eye.
it is a vitriol.
It's vicious.
Yeah. Very vehement.
To the topic at hand. In Japan, Jotaro Joestar has been more or less the signature JoJo of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure and the most popular of the series' heroes among the fanbase, with Dio being the most popular villain, if not the breakout character of the series, for as nearly as long as the manga has been published, introduced in the third arc. Though the manga has been running since the 80s in Japan, for various reasons that you are all aware of, JoJo has not received widespread attention in the West until the recent release of a full anime. One interesting thing I've noticed that in America, Joseph, oh my god, Joestar, seems to be much more popular than his son Jotaro, the supposed mascot of the series, as can be noted in numerous fan polls as well as their relative significance of internet, parentheses, meme, attention, seeming to be the second most popular character next to Dio in the English-speaking world. Do you have any thoughts on this? Any theories as to why Joseph is more popular in America? Do you think it has anything to do with the difference between American and Japanese audiences, or perhaps the difference between audiences between the late 80s when JoJo originally ran and 2010's audiences, or do you think it might have something to do with the qualities of the anime versus the original manga? I think that it is a combination of those factors that you named, and primarily it's going to be the second one, the difference in time periods. Because if you look at the way that, you know, manga protagonists are through history, there is a bit of a trend towards, especially more recent times, that's a bit to more kind of goofier characters, it seems like, more relatable and young heroes. Prior to that, in the 90s, I think it was a bit, you know, on the goofy side, brought about as a result of Dragon Ball. But there was also, you know, the occasional kind of snarky, cool characters in the 90s with, you know, Yusuke. But then, you know, before any of those, there was, you know, Fist of the North Star, and there was, you know, stoic, badass, silent characters were the most popular series. And I think as a result of that, yeah, Jotaro was just kind of popular because he fit that mold more than, you know, the kind of modern takes. Like, I don't know if there's a, what's the most recent series that you would say has, you know, that kind of main character who's just, you know, very silent and calm and nonplussed by everything? Like, I don't think that any of them have really achieved popularity, especially recently.
I mean, it's tough to say. I'm sure there are some out there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are definitely, I don't know if any battle shonen series in that way have really taken off in that respect. Maybe, I guess, to a certain extent, like Attack on Titan to a certain extent has a character like that. But it's still not the same thing of like a quiet, stoic, badass guy. Like the Jotaro, Kentaro kind of clan, Guts, those kinds of guys are less and less of like the common trend nowadays.
Yeah.
But to this question specifically, I think a little bit of the part is sort of what you referenced, the fact that you're kind of noticing this in internet meme culture, and I think a very animated, active character like Joseph is going to make for more memes than a character like Jotaro, who doesn't have lines to rip and pull off of or things like that. You know, you can, I think part of Joseph's oh my god being a meme is the fact that it's, you know, an over-the-top English expression in a Japanese series kind of thing. So I think mm-hmm. part of that is kind of where you're looking at, because I believe Jotaro is still insanely popular here. You know, I think most friends I know who watch Jotaro or JoJo outside of my influence have all been like, Jotaro is a fucking bamf, and they love him. So I think it's also just a little bit of a combination of where you're kind of looking from. Internet culture is going to push out characters who are goofy, over the top more than others, I think.
I think that that's actually one of the things, you know, meme culture, and not necessarily just memes, but sharing small snippets of stuff through YouTube clips and GIFs and stuff like that. They give a different perception of the way that a piece of media is. Like, you'll occasionally see stuff online, and it'll be, you know, some like cult film from like, or, you know, like a less popular animated film that was out when we were kids. And then people are like, well, why was this not a bigger hit? It's, well, because you aren't seeing the whole movie when you watch, yeah, you know, that 30-second clip. You don't get an idea of how the whole thing is if you watch it in context. And maybe you wouldn't actually be as good if you watched the whole thing.
Yep.
Yeah, very interesting question. I really like that one, Redbane.
Very good. Question here from Andre Golden. Dear Seth MacFarlane.
One of many.
Dear Seth MacFarlane, the ruler of Family Guy and American Dad T, are more into Animorphs or Beast Wars?
This is a tough question. When I was younger, I was definitely more into Animorphs. I have probably about 50 books still sitting on my bookshelf because I held on to them from when I was a kid. I was still really into Beast Wars, but just not as into it as I was into Animorphs, even though I got a bunch of the toys and stuff. I've watched the Beast Wars show more recently than I've read the Animorphs books, though, so I would say that now I'm more into it. And I think that also Beast Wars has probably aged a little bit better, not in terms of, like, if you were to expose kids to both of them, I think they would both still hold up about the same, but Beast Wars works better if you're an adult watching it than I think if you're an adult reading Animorphs, just because of the reading level of the books.
It was Animorphs for me. I never liked Beast Wars, particularly as a kid, just because of the art style. I always thought, like, even as a kid, it was one of those things where I was like, this art style looks ugly. I don't like it.
Well, you were thrown off by mid-90s CG.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. I also didn't
How could you be?
I also didn't watch Reboot, so I think it was just that thing, like, early...
Oh, Reboot 90s. Looks even uglier. So. Yeah.
So I think it's just that early 90s, like, computer-generated shows just didn't appeal to me particularly. I know I watched some of Beast Wars, but I just couldn't get into it. And to be fair, I'm not really a Transformers person in general. Mm-hmm. I only love Starscream because I love that no matter how many times it happens, they still allowed the legendary betrayer Starscream into their team. Just like, come on, guys. It's his title.
He can't help it, though.
It's like, but stop inviting him to meetings.
Beast Wars, I think holds up better than a lot of shows from that time period. I think that it was just kind of written in a way that respected its audience and also has a really good sense of humor, honestly, to it.
That's good.
But I do not blame anyone who gets thrown off by the art style. It is definitely a product of the times in that respect. So
I could dig that. But very good question, Andre.
I was about to say, like, I don't know if Chris knows either of these things. So,
yeah, no, I read Animorphs as a kid. I never read.
I never knew that. I don't think that we've ever talked about that before.
I never read the entirety of the series because it was one of those things. I used to get the Scholastic books delivered to my house, and it was like a 3-volume collection at once. Mm-hmm. And I stopped. I probably only got to like maybe the 20s or so. But my friend Frank read the entire series, so he mm-hmm. would talk to me about them all the time and all the stuff that happened in it. So I was always vaguely, like, I was always aware of what was happening. Like, I know how the series ends, which is really sad. You know, I watched the TV show.
It's tragic as fuck for a Scholastic kid
series. I was like, what? All of them? Like, all of them one?
Except Cassie.
All of them? Like, oh, and one of them, like, has, like, fucking, like, rage problems and dies in, like, a, like, enormous, like, suicide mission insane run. Like, oh, God. But, no, we read them in some of my class as a kid. And I read some on my own, and I played some of the games as well. I read them a lot as a kid, like the dinosaur books when that was a big thing. They went back in time,
yeah,
just so they could go back in time and have dinosaur powers as well.
That one's also a tragic fucking story.
Yeah, I think that's what I also appreciate about them. I never recognized it at the time, but they were some pretty heavy books when I got down to it. Like when you look at it, you're like, oh, Tobias is this kid with just a life so fucking awful. He'd rather never be human again so he can live free like a bird, get away from his abusive family. Like, even when he's given the chance to not do it again, he's still like, I'm gonna hang out as a bird most of the time. Like,
I'm just morphing to a human when I want to make out with Rachel, you know.
Like, oh, this is so sad. But no, I like
then
that.
He finds out who his real parents were.
Yeah, I don't think I never got super far into the series. I think the one place I could say is around where I stopped is when there was the sixth Animorph. Jake or whatever, or not Jake. What was his name?
David.
I know everything that happened with him. I know about him turning into a rat and everything like that. I just never read to that point, and that's around my friend Frank just kind of gave me all the information going forward about this. Gotcha. Series.
Well, I mean, from there, there's still like, you know, 35 or something books to go after that point. So.
There's a shit ton of them, but no. There are
54 books in the main line, and I think that there were 4 Megamorphs books, the specials that shifted between the different characters' points of view. And there were like awesome. 4 Chronicles books. So you're looking at around like 60, 64 books or something like that.
There's good shit there.
Yeah. Also, I remember that when I was a kid, I really hated reading Goosebumps books because, you know, I was like, I don't like being scared. Then you read Animorphs and there's all this body horror and Invasion of the Body Snatcher shit going on. It's like, huh, I guess that I was still reading horror, huh?
I remember when they did the Animorphs TV series and they took the horror that existed in the idea of being like controlled by a yerk and they just like boiled it down to like, it's like being tied up inside your own brain. You're like, I feel like there was a heavier way you could have done this than this.
That was not a good show.
Not in the slightest.
I still remember the theme song though. Anyway, let's go to the next one.
All right.
This is a bit of an interesting and long one from Ellie Feeden. Hey there, Nick. I get knocked down, but I get up again. You're never gonna keep me down. I'm not gonna repeat it. And Chris, we will rock you. Boom, boom. No more repetition of that. How are you guys doing this insert current date? I have some sports themes question for you, starting with songs used a lot in sports. Between the two previous songs, which one gets you more psyched up for the big game? The second one, because why the fuck would you get psyched up from tub thumping?
Like, the first one, because who the fuck cares about the second one?
It's Queen!
I don't give a fuck about Queen, but Chumbawamba is incredible. This is the death of the podcast. we connected
You're
over...
You're dead to me, Chris.
We connected over French toast, but this was a bridge too far.
How do you get psyched up for a sporting event from, you might beat me down, but I'll keep getting up, stop hurting me?
It's not even about that. It's one of those great lines of lineage of sports songs that are nothing to do with like competitiveness in any way, shape, or form. Because it's all about
not even a sports song.
No, I mean, I forget what the actual point of the song is. I don't even think it's specifically a drinking song. I think it's something else to do with that altogether. But it's a great fucking song. I love that song. Here's the thing. I would listen to Tub Thumping on its own. I would never, ever listen to We Will Rock You outside of a sporting event.
That's fair. All right. While we're on the topic of sports songs, there's something I was wondering recently. You know the song Take Me Out to the Ball Game and how it's the unofficial song for baseball. Do you know if other sports have an official or unofficial song? And I don't believe that any do, not that I can think of. I racked my brain when I first read this question. I was like, I do not think so. I cannot think of one. There, it is definitely certainly possible that there might be, but...
Are we forgetting the unofficial theme song of basketball? It's
the theme song. I mean, that by that, you know, nature, then it's like, you know, whatever, like, you know, da 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 would be the NFL song, or...
Da 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 da.
We do really like sports theme songs, by the way.
I love that shit. Well, here's the thing.
I remember you actually first introduced me to Round Ball Rock and how awesome that was.
There's a ton of great songs too of like official NFL theme music. Like if you ever get the chance, if you like want to listen to like a really epic song, listen to the NFL Lombardi theme. It's a theme they play when they give the Lombardi Trophy at the end of the year, and it's fucking awesome. It's so
or like NFL films music too.
I'm pissed. There used to be an amazing song. They played it during this. It was a highlight package of the match between the New York Giants and the Carolina Panthers in the 2008 season. The NFL.com used to do this video package, like Game of the Week during that season. And they played this crazy epic song in the second, like the latter half of it. And I could never find out what it was. And I can't find the video now to like try to Shazam it or anything. And it pisses me off every day. I'm like, I want to know what that song was.
There's a guy called John Boy who does great videos for SB Nation. I mean, just really, really good if you're a sports nerd, and some of them even if you're not. And he used this song at the end of his one about Baron Davis's 87-foot shot, and it's a really catchy song, but he only plays like 3 seconds of it before, you know, it fades out for some other audio over the credits. And I was like, what is this song? Because it's not credited anywhere in it. And I couldn't like use that sound loop to like identify it with online music identification programs because it's such a small bit. And then he used it in a later video and he actually did credit the song. And I was like, oh, I found it! It's here!
That is a moment of relief that I may never feel, but I'm very glad that you got to.
It's called Pals and Cows.
Very cool.
There's more to it.
Yeah, I was going to say, is there a question beyond this?
Let's get into the main event. You know how various people ask you questions to Ryan strange enough, and you thank God I got to this point, this one, and prepared for it earlier. Otherwise, I'd be very angry at you. Humor circumstances that also take up a huge chunk of time, and sometimes you have to bump those to the next Q&A. This is my attempt at one. Yay! Congratulations, you two have received huge inheritances from a distant godfather who you've never seen since birth and have decided to open up high school dedicated to competitions. It's not just sports. You also have other competitive activities like card games, chess, mahjong, cooking, etc. You have plenty of money to offer scholarships to fill out the teams for every sport and activity in your school. The only question is who. From the many manga series you know of, you can choose one team or group from each sport for each sport slash activity to join your school, regardless of the time period the team may have been active in comparison to the other teams. Which team would you choose for? I don't know. Which team would you choose for which sport and why? And then some of the how many sports are you two aware of?
Some.
A lot.
I'm aware of some sports.
It's difficult to answer that question because the definition of a sport is kind of
a changing.
It's changing constantly with new sports being invented every day, basically. Like
and also what people consider sports constantly changing. I mean, some people would consider it with hobby and leisure, but you always go back to like what used to be the old school question when I was in like high school was, is cheerleading a sport? And I absolutely consider it one, but I know back when I was in school, a lot of people were like, no, it's something kind of different. And then you get into the point of like, should spelling bees be sports? Should esports be sports? Should poker be a sport? Should this be a sport? Should that be a sport? It's a tough thing to nail down.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. But in general, like, God, like drone flying is a sport now. Yeah. So it's basically an impossible question to answer, I'm afraid.
I think the level I take it is this at least in a similar realm as actively challenging as golf? And to that extent, almost everything is a sport in my mind. So there you go.
In terms of what I have actually done for the competitions, what I just did was I just like decided to assign a sport or competition of some sort to the manga that we regularly recap to keep it simple, because the confines of this question were much broader than that. And I was just like, I don't want to put myself through that. So for One Piece, I have the Straw Hats as a boating team, which they can do now that they've got Jinbei. So there you go. For Boruto, laser tag.
Nice. You upgraded it. I think that's good.
For Dr. Stone, I literally wrote this down, and now I don't know why I wrote it down, but I'm going to keep the answer anyway. Freeze tag.
What?
I don't know.
There must be a story of, like, Nick 4 o'clock in the morning reading this question. Like,
I did this an hour ago.
Oh, wow.
I don't know. Maybe I subconsciously connected it to petrification.
I guess that seems weird. Like, it's almost insulting to them. Like, oh, it's like,
it really is. Like, they get frozen in stone just because someone goes,
you're it.
For My Hero Academia, I did Hyalai. Well, yeah, that makes more sense to me because, you know, it's a bunch of, you know, dodging around and. For The Promised Neverland, the only real, like, groups that I could think of were, you know, basically the group that Emma's a part of now, the Resistance Fire, so I did Skeet Shooting.
Okay. Yeah, that's it.
For Food Wars, of course, you know, the trading card game, you know, that's got to be it.
Food Wars, the trading card game is a
great... They already have, you know, the proper over-the-top reactions to everything down, so, you know.
I wonder, what would a Food Wars trading card game be? Like, is like your ace in the hole to be like, I play Foodgasm.
Pretty much.
Or is that like their mana, where you just like, you have to have like seven.
Yeah, you gotta like gather up a certain amount of Foodgasm points before unleashing your dish.
Yeah, oh, that would be it.
And for Black Clover, I've got football. And for We Never Learn, I put Keijo.
Okay. Wait, what?
Keijo.
But what series?
We Never Learn.
The butt boob smashing series?
Yes! Okay. It's the fan service series, Chris.
All right. You know what? Fair enough. Takamoto, I would, I mean, I guess you'd be good at it.
Uruka would have to be the ace, yes.
Yeah, all right. I could see it. I dig it.
All you sound far more trepidatious about this than I dig it, seems to imply.
You know, it's one of those things. Brain just kind of has to get used to it. It's kind of like, I don't know, hearing something alien for the first time, and you're like, that's uncomfortable. But then you start getting used to it, and you're like, okay, I guess.
If you say so.
Okay. Yeah. I have none prepared, so you did all the good answers. So, all
right.
Let's move on to another question from Andre Golden. Dear Santa Claus, the ruler of Christmas, and Frosty the Snowman T, do you like fan art? Yes, of course you like fan art. It is very awesome to see it. It is extremely grateful and humbling to get, and we more than happily would love to see any fan art you guys have. So feel free to send those. We always
I was thinking of fan art in general.
Oh,
the fan art we get is always appreciated. It's great. Fan art, I like fan art in general when it comes to stuff other than us as well. It's more a matter of, like, with exceptions, you know? So.
I could dig it. I'm going to do...
What was that thing that... don't send us your knee inflation porn, please. That's...
I didn't know that was even a thing, so hopefully we don't get more of that done.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to do the next question because that was really short.
It was short.
Sorry, this is from Emperor Dian, by the way. Dear Nick Blanco, ruler of time... and El Grande Roroti. I wish I could roll my R's. I'd made that sound much better.
Rololo.
El Grande Roroti.
Good.
Disney's all-encompassing consumption of all popular media, they find themselves purchasing situation all of its properties. Realizing that they essentially have a second Marvel, they decide to have a second cinematic universe on their hands, but 2 minutes of watching Dragon Ball Evolution alone convinces them they should be animated rather than live action. So, which series would you pick first to get solo movies to build up to the Jump team-up movie, and how would you bring them together story-wise? Also, what do you think said Jump team-up movie would be like? For bonus points, what series would make up Phase 2? So here's the thing. These questions get asked to us a lot in some similar variation of what would it be like to do a Jump universe version of the MCU. And the big question is always, well, the big thing to bring up is that the Marvel movies... can easily do that because they exist in the same universe. The Jump series do not exist in the same universes. They all exist in separate universes outside of, like, the one-offs where Toriko, Dragon Ball, and One Piece was all the same universe.
Right.
So I guess to that extent, Toriko, One Piece, and Dragon Ball are our first three because they're the only ones that have anything. Because they're the only ones that
confirm share a universe.
Yeah, and then...
Well, Haikyuu and Nisekoi share a universe. This is confirmed.
Okay, so our big team-up is Luffy, Toriko, Goku, fucking Hinata,
and then Raku.
Is it just Raku?
Raku and Hinata.
His powers are for girls to be attracted to him.
And Hinata is a short kid who jumps high.
And every other character around him is sort of like... defined by easily being able to jump way higher than him. Look, if you were to say, all right, the team-up movie is some kind of like Crisis on Infinite Earths, like multiple universes colliding together to face some kind of like Omnivon like threat or whatever, fine. Then I would say you're going to want Dragon Ball to be your big guy because that's the one people are going to know. Then do like One Piece, probably Naruto again, because that's like your Thor kind of thing. Like, these are like the names that people are going to kind of know and are like big, powerful kind of people. And then, I don't know, I guess the first MCU was, or no, there was the Hulk too. So, I don't know, would be like a fourth one to throw in there.
I think that you would probably want to go for something a little bit more unorthodox, maybe like a really popular one that's not a traditional battle series, like a Slam Dunk or something like that.
But what's the Slam Dunk character going to do during the big crossover?
He's going to dunk on people, Chris.
Maybe that's where you put like a JoJo in, I guess, maybe.
Maybe a JoJo. I think that with the increase in popularity recently, that will work, sure.
Yeah, so I guess those are them. And their big team-up movie is they fight some weird like amalgamation. Some guy who like is a power level 9,000 who ate the strongest devil fruit and has mastered all of the special eyeballs and has
the can send people to the acid dimension.
Yeah, and has the most powerful stand, and they have to fight against him, you know, or something like that. I don't know. Like some dude where it's like Blackbeard got fused together with Frieza and Orochimaru and Dio, and like it's them, and that sounds like such an annoying character. Holy shit. Like his tongue would be everywhere, he'd be cackling. Oh my god, his voice would be so obnoxious.
Yeah I think that I would agree with something quite along the lines of what you said. I also put down, okay, if you're gonna want to do the first sequence, then you're going to want to have Dragon Ball, Naruto, and One Piece in there, and then there'll probably have to be a fourth one, at least if nothing else, then to pad out the cast a little bit for when the crossover actually happens. And then in the second phase, you're going to want to do stuff that, you know, is maybe a bit more of a throwback, not quite as well known to Western audiences, but still very popular stuff like Fist of the North Star, some more JoJo stuff, probably throw in Bleach there.
And you could probably also
My Hero Academia, in order to, you know, start off the modern hits and stuff like that.
And you also have the notion of like kind of like what the Guardians were, like an outside property that could be really big or something like that. So maybe you throw in like a Knights of the Zodiac or like a Hell Teacher Nube or even like Najin Tante Nagami Neuro, like something that's just weird and crazy and out there. But brings a different
can you
flavor.
Imagine, Chris, if you had like the Knights of the Zodiac be, you know, the equivalent of the Guardians of the Galaxy, then, you know, you start up the big trailer that gets everyone's attention. And I ran so far away.
And they still get bullied for Soup to do it. Like Flock of Seagulls like, oi, what about us? You had your chance, Flock of Seagulls.
No, we didn't.
Boy, he never asked us this at all.
Well, we're Australian now.
Aren't they British? I think they're British, aren't they?
I'm pretty sure they're British.
Oh, that's my great British impersonation.
Yeah, your... Along with your great ideas, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, those weren't your great ideas. My mistake.
No, they're not mine. Come on.
No. Or they're Mr. Great Ideas. Yeah. Interesting interesting idea, though. All right. Let's move on to the next one, assuming that Yahoo Mail will let me navigate back. Why don't you just read the next one, right, Chris, so that I can actually fucking...
It's an Andre Golden question, so it's pretty quick. Dear Lori Loud, the Ruler of Time, and Lenny Loud T, if you had any lieutenant from Bleach to be your lieutenant, who would that be?
Rukia.
Why Rukia?
Because she's Rukia!
I need more to that.
Because she's smart, she's funny, she's cool, and she's awesome.
Okay, fair enough. I didn't know if it was...
You're drilling me over this.
Well, I was like, is this
As if it's not the most obvious answer.
Is it? I wanted to make sure it wasn't some, you know, Peaches-related question, you know?
Oh, come the fuck on.
I don't know, Nick. You said it with such confidence and vigor, I wanted to be sure. Who do I want to be my lieutenant? They're all...
I want Rukia to be my vice captain because she's my waifu, Chris. There you have it.
Yes, now we have the answer we were looking for. I'm going to say... I guess I'll say Rangetsu.
Rangiku?
Yeah.
Matsumoto? What, is she your waifu?
No, God, no.
So offended.
I just want like someone to like be lazy around with and shit.
Oh, you just want
to go drinking, things like that. Yeah, like a party person.
So you would basically have kind of like an Ashin relationship with her, where you just kind of unload stuff off onto a young little Hitsugaya and then go hang out and drink and stuff.
Yeah, I'm just like, here you go. And I throw stuff at Hitsugaya and I hit his face every time because that's what I do. It's my style. And then we go out drinking and having fun.
I can dig it. All right. Well, I'll do the next couple from Andre Golden here. Dear Miraculous Ladybug, the Ruler of France, and Cat Noir T, have you seen any One Piece movies? Yes. In fact, we did a bonus review of Baron Amaturi and the, was it Forgotten Island or something? Was it? We've done a review of one of them. Yes.
Yeah, I forget what that kind of island it was, but yeah, it's along that same line. Yeah, I've also watched Strong World. I watched one of the other ones. Oh, we watched Did we watch another one? Maybe we didn't. I know I've watched a couple. I've watched Strong
World. I haven't watched any besides that one.
I think I watched War Z, or Zed, whatever it was.
The Dragon Ball crossover?
No. The one with the guy with like the big metal heat arm thing. I forget. I think it's called like War Zed or something like that. I forget the exact title, but I watched that one. And I want to say I watched part of the Alabasta one that was just like a redoing of Alabasta. I watched that. Mm-hmm. And I think those are most of the one.
All right. Next to 400 Golden, dear Walter White, the ruler of Blue Crystal Meth, and Jesse Pinkman T. If you were married to one of Big Mom's daughters, who would they be?
I barely remember half of her daughters.
I'm going to go with Praline, the woman daughter, basically just because she has her convictions and legit fell in love with her husband and decided to help him out when it meant turning against her mother. That's loyalty and love right there. I feel like I could depend on someone who could do that.
I'm going to say smoothies because she got them tiggle bitties. Now, I'm going to say Katakuri. Even though he's not one of the daughters, I'm going to love who I want to love, and you can't tell me otherwise.
Aw.
Yeah. Now you That's feel sweet. Like the asshole.
This one's a weird one.
All right.
This seems a little bit trolly to me.
I haven't even fully read this one yet. Dear Nick, to mark this message as urgent, please push 11 treatment. And Chris, there is no 11, you fucking whore, Larius. Question 1. How much of a goddamn pair of ass wipes are you two to overhype statistics attempt to believe you were going to make it a month all about nothing but the worst nostalgic manga you've read, when really it was an excuse for Nick to read Prince of Tennis?
We were very upfront about what Statistics September was, so...
I think there isn't a collection of nostalgic manga Nick could have read otherwise that would have been worse than reading Prince of Tennis as well. Second question, you all idiots. Will next year's Sticks of September have more than one manga this time so we can have Flame Wrecker, Get Backers, and maybe even Tenjo Tenge, Seriously When, all in the same month? Or are you much too much of a bunch of fluffernutters to handle 3 to 5 horrible manga at once? So, we're not too much of fluffernutters to handle 3 to 5 horrible manga at once. We're too much of people with other things that we need to do with our lives besides read manga entirely, which will make it difficult to read series like Flame of Recca, Get Backers, and Tenjo Tenge, which are all multiple year-run longing series all in the span of 1 month. So we're most likely not. I'm definitely open to the idea of reading several shorter, terrible series during a Statistics September. I think that's a fine idea. But having to read 3 or 4, or as you even oppose, 5 there, super terrible series all in the span of 1 month is simply not going to happen. Question 2, why didn't you include the Hamtaro Fiend in your quote-unquote best of openings list? The putrid autotone section in the middle really cements as a top 3 contender. It was one that maybe should have gone in there. I thought the other ones were more enjoyable.
I thought of it, but then I listened to it and I was like, this is not as bad as some of the others they could be. So.
Yeah, and it's I don't know, maybe it doesn't have the cheesiness to it that I kind of want, but it certainly should have been like an honorable mention. 3, since you are a bunch of Pop-Tart elitists, what do you think of my shit taste in strawberry, chocolate chip, and cinnamon roll?
I'll take this one. I don't like chocolate, so I can't actually judge you on the chocolate chip ones. I've never tried them myself because I just hate chocolate in general. I think that the cinnamon roll Pop-Tarts were very disappointing because they feature none of the best parts of cinnamon roll. It's just cinnamon with some weird whipped cream on them. Strawberry, I like strawberry. They were my favorite types of Pop-Tart when I was a kid.
Yeah, strawberry is super solid. Can't fault that. Mm-hmm. Question 4, where's the Walrus Pit? I don't know what this is a reference to, so I'm going to answer. It's at the end of Tusk, when you find out Justin Long, who has already been turned into a walrus, can never be truly unchanged back, and they decide that instead of mercy killing him, they leave him in a zoo for the rest of his life, which is a super dark and depressing ending, and really highlights what a weird, strange movie that was. Mm-hmm. But it was still an interesting trip, and I guess Kevin Smith should be glad that one pot-fueled joke led to an entire motion picture. So, there you go.
My computer's being very slow, so I can't actually open the emails right now.
It's another Andre Golden one, so I'll answer this one real quick. Dear Linkara, the ruler of Atop the Fourth Wall, and History of Power Rangers T. This year is Atop the Fourth Wall's 10th anniversary, and I wonder what are some of your favorite episodes of Atop the Fourth Wall?
It's actually a difficult question because I have never really been one to really go back and rewatch a lot of Linkara's stuff. He does some great videos, and I admire his work ethic to be so goddamn consistent with that show every single week. But I don't know if there are any episodes that I go back to and watch a whole lot. There are certain jokes that I remember, a lot of which is because he really likes to have his catchphrases and stuff and uses repetition. But I don't really have any favorite episodes of his proper. I do really like going back and rewatching all of his History of Power Rangers stuff every now and then, though.
Yeah, History of Power Rangers stuff's great. There are episodes that I can recall really enjoying a lot. I don't know if I have anything to like say as my favorite. It's kind of a tough thing since I haven't watched like a lot of those episodes you said since I first watched them, which is going back now upon 10 years or so. But I'll say some episodes I really love was the Amazon's Attack series, the Crisis on Infinite Earths, the one which was like the top 10 worst supervillains of all time, was it? Or it was the one that ended with Snowflame. And I remember, or no, it was
Snowflame.
It was the top 10 what the fuck moments in comics, I think it was. And then it was Snowflame, and that was such a great fucking like character to like reveal to everybody and everything like that. So those are some that are really good that I definitely hold a solid place in my heart from. And I know he's not listening, but congratulations, like Linkara, on 10 years. Yeah, it's extremely awesome.
All right, I've got my computer working again, so I'll do this. More Andre Colton. There's a couple more in a row. Dear Vampirella, the ruler of time, and Vampirina T, which member of Team Juniper is your favorite? Team Juniper, by the way, for the uninitiated, is the kind of secondary team in Ruby. So I don't know how well you remember these characters, Chris.
The J.
Okay.
That's my favorite character.
It's Jean. Or Jean, or however the fuck you say his name.
I hated Jean. Jean sucked ass.
He was awful. Nora, Pyrrha, and Rin.
No.
I think that Pyrrha is going to win by default because I think that Nora is annoying and Rin is not really much of a character, honestly, and Jean is super annoying, so let's go with Pyrrha.
Can my answer of both teams have heart attacks and lose be an equivalent answer here?
Sure, why not?
All right, cool.
Okay, and another one from Andre Golden. If you go back, dear why the ruler of Baby Driver and Boss Baby T, everywhere
why
I go.
Why do I keep getting the worst of these two?
Flame Andre Golden.
Serious, man.
Everywhere I go, everyone always says nothing but good things about Hunter x Hunter. And so my question is, what do you think is a low point in Hunter x Hunter? I would go with the bidding stuff.
I was just about to say that.
What was the point?
When you spend like 6 chapters explaining the auction process and they don't do it.
So there you go.
Or if you need my equivalent answer, when they spend like 20 chapters explaining the card game and then do almost nothing with it.
Oh boy.
All right. Questions here from Julian, or sorry, Thank You Base Green. That's who it is. Or Thank You Base James. I don't know why I said green. Hey, Nick and Chris. Question one. I was getting drunk off my leftover New Year's rum the other day, and I remembered that the priest Sanji at Pudding's wedding was wearing a vestment with crossings on it. Then I remembered that Bartholomew Kuma was always walking around with a Bible, which is all the evidence I need to prove Christianity must exist in One Piece, which must mean Jesus exists in One Piece. What do you think One Piece Jesus would be like?
That is a very interesting question, because you've got to figure out, because he demonstrated a series of miracles. So how would they all work? I guess that you would have to say that some of the miracles he demonstrated, like, you know, walking on water and stuff like that.
Brooke did
hockey.
That. Brooke did that.
What?
Brooke can run on water.
Oh, he's just a skeleton.
He's just
and
a
that's why he was that's why he's risen.
He's just a skeleton and he has the wine fruit. That's why he could turn water into wine. He could turn everything into wine.
Is that how he also cures the sick?
Yeah, he pours enough wine into their eyes to make them see again.
So there you go.
I had a religious dilemma today, Nick. I made a joke. One of my friends was asking, like, hey, what food should I bring to D&D? And I, like, jokingly said, you should bring Eucharist wafers because of it being so close to Easter. And I was like, would it be extremely sacrilegious to purchase and eat Eucharist wafers if they haven't been consecrated yet? Because they're not actually the body and blood of Christ. They're just wafers at that point. So is it still sacrilegious or not?
Why do you even want the wafers? I want wafers.
I really want $40 box of wafers, apparently, with very little taste to them.
Get them stuck to the roof of my mouth.
Yeah. Question two. There's this manga called Ginga, Nara, etc. It's a shonen battle manga about a dog who goes on a quest to recruit the strongest dogs in Japan in order to form a pact that will be able to revenge murder the bear that killed his father and grandfather. Nick, why are we reading this next? It got me thinking, if you could have a manga starring one of the animal characters from a manga you read, who would it be and what story would you tell?
Duh. Hawk, the world's strongest warrior. It would be all about Hawk's adventures. Come on.
I do like this idea. I assume it would be solely financed by you for your personal enjoyment.
Let's track down the Seven Deadly Sins author. Is like, listen, you must make this spinoff. Who would read it? Me!
Me! Just me alone! But here's a dunk truck full of money. I would...
Hawk is the 11th most popular character in that series. It would have other people read it. If Rock Lee can get his popular spinoff manga, Hawk can get a popular spinoff manga.
You have a fair point. Question then, what will mine be? I would take Musi, and it would be a new manga that would essentially be a retelling of One Piece, but solely with different animal characters representing the other Straw Hats. So Musi would be Luffy, and then we'd have like Boro, or no, okay, well, I guess it could be a boar. I was gonna say like Boro instead of Zoro, and he has three tusks. That's how he fights. He fights with two tusks, brilliant. And then he has a tusk in his mouth.
And he still has to have the third one come out of the middle of his mouth.
Yes. Then we'll have Swami, and she'll be a Siamese cat for Nami. Then there'll be...
And then Chopper will be a human who ate the deer food.
Yes. Then you'll have... what would Sanji be? Sanji is a duck in character, so I guess we'll go with a duck. Because he can't be exactly that. He'll be an eagle called Kranji, and Usopp will be an anteater, so he can have the same enormous nose. Oh, and Frankie is a robot battle tank hippo wearing a Speedo. He's still just called Frankie. Three, this year I read this horrible yet compulsively readable manga called Uwakoi.
Yes.
It's by the same guy that did Akisora, so yeah. And at the stupidest goddamn deaths I've ever seen in a manga, I was laughing even though what was happening wasn't intentionally funny. What are some of the stupidest or most nonsensical deaths you've seen in manga?
A lot of the ones that come up during horror month, honestly.
Yeah, I think we talked about it not too long ago, but the guy from Biomega who
one of my favorite deaths.
Who starts screaming like,
no!
It's such a cute little creature. Ah, it's eating me.
They told you.
They're like, no, no matter how cute it is, for the love of God, kill it. Question four. At the time of reading this, I'm reading JoJo's Part 5. Chris, can you please explain how the fuck King Crimson and Epitaph work? So, King Crimson is something that I believe is made much more complicated. This is something that I've come to realize by personal experience and other people telling me. His power is not that complicated. It's really bad translation.
Ooh. It
kind of overcomplicating what is a relatively simple thing. So, the idea is Dio's the world, stops time. King Crimson erases time for everyone else but him. So, the way someone is kind of... explained it is Dio, or the way King Crimson works is he basically is cause and effect, and he erases the cause, and everyone else jumps right to the effect. So he like punches forward and everyone else loses that moment of reactionary time and he just rips through your body or something like that.
Interesting.
And this kind of goes in direct contrast to what the way he is defeated is, which is something that erases effect and just gives cause over and over again. So that's kind of a simpler way to explain it. It's still a little complicated, but it's similar to the time manipulation that Dio used, just on a slightly different scale.
So basically, if he, like, you know, had a sword with him, then you would suddenly be cut because you there for you there would be no point where you could see him swinging the sword.
Or he'd swing the sword and you would be raising your hand to block, and then you've already realized you've been cut. Mm. So you could just erase that very vulnerable moment where you need to react.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Then we're going to move on to some stuff from Now 4. Dear Nick, who starts every morning by punching while screaming, not to work out, but because he wants to one day obtain a fraction of the joy Star Platinum feels when he's punching through a giant set of teeth under the sea or beating a pedophile orangutan named Forever. And Chris!
The pedophile orangutan was named the Captain and Tennille. Let's get it right.
His stand was Forever. And Chris, last seen being eaten alive by piranha while flying a World War II bomber into a volcano. Reports of a heroic cyborg Nazi shooting at a half-birdman are still under investigation. Now four here, with 15 other guys coming out of the back of my head, while you two try to stop your transformation into trees by gambling away all your money. Manga is full of occurrences that, told to outsiders without context, seem to be butter-fucking insane, such as the giant baby man, who all the ladies swoon over, grabbed the Speedo cyborg and swam up the side of a tower and did a flying suplex. But the all-time king to this is, of course, JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. The only manga where you can say something like, and then Sports Max used the power of Lip Biscuit to attack Hermes with an invisible zombie alligator, no, not a ghost, so she used Kiss to make two pipes and crush him. So what are some of your favorite JoJo non-sequiturs to drop off people who have never read or watched the series? And since I mentioned one outside the series, are there any other manga and anime that you also like that do that?
Weather Report uses subliminal messages to turn people into snails. That's my favorite to ultimately use. Like, even when you read JoJo, you're still like, what? Why?
I think that one of my favorite ones recently is just the final battle with Kira in Part 4. Yeah. And then Kira used Stray Cat, which is really more of a plant than a cat, honestly, to shoot air bubbles, which Killer Queen turns into bombs until Okuyasu grabbed Stray Cat by erasing the space between himself and the hole in Killer Queen's chest.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of good ones later on, too. Like, they had to make sure Hot Pants used her best power to its fullest after her heroic sacrifice or things like that.
Just because of the names.
Yeah, you're like, these names are great. Yeah, but yeah, Weather Report uses his stand, his new evolved stand, to turn people into snails through subliminal messages is the best.
Actually, you saying Weather Report reminds me of some of the non-sequiturs that you can pull out of Yu-Gi-Oh! Too, so.
Sure that. There are a lot of good ones. I think, yeah, One Piece is a series about a rubber pirate who teams up with a reindeer man, an afro-haired skeleton, and an Ace Ventura cyborg. It's like, those lines that you kind of almost enjoy those series being so goofy so you can just say them out loud.
Mm-hmm. And also, since we're in JoJo already, are there any panels from the manga that you think are that are most worthy of being wallpaper on your phone or computer screen or blown up into posters on your wall?
There's a ton of them, I'm sure, that I really would love to have that with. Like, I think maybe the ones I think of the most would be, like, the giant two-page spreads from One Piece, like, everyone raising up their arms, or all the characters staying on the top of Enies Lobby, or even, like, when they all arrive on the ship down in Murmur Island, and they're, going up against Hody Jones and everything like that. Like, just those big, all the crew are back together moments are pretty sweet, so those would probably be good ones, but I know there's a ton of amazing pieces of art that I'd love to have as, like, wallpaper or just, like, posters in my room, but I can't think of one off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm. Good.
All right. Next question here is a Patreon thing. You should not be in this folder. Away. All right. It's an Andre Gold one. All right. Dear War Ruler of the Emoji Movie and The Mummy 2017 T.
I'm not sure which of us got off better in that one.
I think I win in that one. Which fairy tale opening do you enjoy listening the most? I don't have an answer for this because I don't listen to them that frequently.
Yeah, the only one that I actually am at all really familiar with is the Believe in Myself one, Speed Up, Speed Up.
Believe it or not, I'm not.
Not that song.
Damn. Because that would have been my answer. I guess I don't have one then.
All right. This next one comes from Satellite of Love. Dear, y'all want to see Nick Rube sometime? Give me a hell yeah! And Rolo, Pink Kryptonite Tea.
I know what that's from.
I do not.
It was this episode of Super Larios Brothers where I brought up how I was looking at the different forms of kryptonite and what they do.
Because there's like 12 of them or something. Yeah.
And pink kryptonite just makes Superman like effeminate and gay. And I was joking, if I was ever a villain in a Superman universe, my whole thing would, I'd be the shit stir, and I just show up to Superman like around him and with pink kryptonite whenever he's in like important things. He just starts becoming like really over the top flamboyant and everything like that. He's like, damn it, the shit stir is here. I'm as hot as the Dickens I am now. Like, he just starts to compliment all the dudes around him. He's like, my Jimmy, you've gotten huge muscles now. You can bounce a quarter off that butt so taut.
All right, for the question. Let's say Osamu and Yuiga mysteriously swap places in their respective manga. In what ways would they improve or worsen each other's positions in their stories? For the sake of the scenario, let's just say that Yuiga has just as much trying as Osamu currently does. Well, I think that it would result in Yuiga basically just moving to being like a coordinator or a coach or something like that, because he's, you know, a teacher kind of character. So
yeah, he'd be more of a mentor student. And if you're looking for like what Osamu would do in Yuiga's place, I think he would just be, he wouldn't fall into the situations that like Yuiga does, where he's like even like, oh, like stuttering innocent child. Because Yuiga, like, Osamu, I think, just doesn't even have, like, he's almost, like, asexual mind. Because he's just so focused on, like, trying to be helpful to everybody.
Yeah.
That I assume he's like, I gotta figure our way back to border and everything else like that. But I'll help you guys out along the way or something like those lines. He'd still be a very good boy, but I feel like, it's just, like, any even, like, remote sexual, like, infatuation wouldn't occur with him.
Yeah. Like, you know, Rizu would fall into him boobs first and he would just catch her and be like, okay, I gotta get back to work.
He's like, I must work on my quantum temporal reporter again.
Okay.
All right. Oh my God, what is this?
It's okay. It's just a reference list.
Oh, okay. All right. Question one. Oh, sorry. Hello, Y Ruler of Baby Memories and Rolo, not an important character, T. Question one, I was thinking back and going downloading all the WMR episodes to re-listen to from the beginning. I was wondering, what's the best place to find the most complete list of episodes? And how complete is the list when it comes to early episodes? Does WMR have any lost older episodes due to blip or anything? So the best
Yes and no.
The best place to go is Podbean and iTunes, which is just Podbean's list aggregated to a different service. And for the most part, everything is full. There are one or two episodes that were like solo episodes that afterwards, maybe the person who recorded was like, "And this isn't really worth putting out." And we didn't release as like a full episode or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And then there's also the infamous episode from last year. I didn't get out and then we lost the blip recording and shit like that. So that's, I think, the only quote, like true lost episode out there. Otherwise, everything from, like, our early years, our first episode on Podbean, on iTunes, is our first episode of Weekly Manga Recap, you know, and it includes that entire run, you know, when episodes were 45 minutes long and shit like that, so you get the whole collection of Weekly Manga Recap.
Yeah, it's not like there's going to be missing a huge gap from, like, when we moved streams or anything like that.
Nope, everything's there. So you enjoy them just the same. Question two, I'm surprised nobody's asked this yet, but how would you rank the top three best and worst series you reviewed on the show thus far? To help with you, I've listed your year-end list from 2011 onward. Maybe omit Prince of Tennis and Air Gear if they're too obvious.
Ranking the best is a bit difficult because, you know, there are some that, like, I just really enjoyed reading in that one instant. There are some that I've picked up and have been reading since. Like, My Hero Academia started off as a recommendation, for one thing. So it's really hard for me to rank that. I can tell you very easily what my least favorites are. It's Usagi Drop, Today Love Starts, and Spider-Man.
I would say Freezy would be on there. And then probably my least favorites from there are like Terraformars and Prison School, which aren't bad in the same way Freezy necessarily is, but they're just series I don't gel with whatsoever. Like, they're just not series for me in any way, shape, or form. I find them kind of, like, ugly and repulsive series, so they just don't gel with me. But I don't want to say, like, those are the worst series in existence, because that's not what I'm trying to say. They're just the worst ones for me. And as for best, God, I always forget Chaotic Ruin and how glorious and terrible
it's okay, we erased her memories.
I forgot how fucking awful that series is, and then I like look back at it sometimes like that was gloriously bad. For best, I don't know, there's a lot of really good ones that we read. Silent Voice was a really excellent series. Onanimasta Kurosawa, Real was really good. I don't know. I think maybe one of the series I enjoyed reading the most from everything we read was be like Angel Densetsu, Vinland Saga, and Good Ending. I think those are the ones that, like, after reading them, I was like, God, I never would have touched this series had it not been for this podcast.
Yeah.
And those are always my favorites. Question three. I'm sorry.
Oh, God.
All right. Question three, would you ever consider doing a month, theme month of side manga, where you review a bunch of supplemental manga or side stories like Freezy Zero, Future Diary Paradox, or that stupid Black Clover novel thingy? Might be doable since it's short and you'd get to revisit some of your favorite series.
I actually really like this idea.
It's a good idea. If we could find enough to cover that month, yeah, I think that's definitely something we could keep in the lineup. And four, I was going to suggest a fairy tale side month in the last question, but then I discovered there are fucking five of them. Would you ever cover those? Perhaps like you do JoJo or Pokemon, except less fun.
I actually did cover one of them for the Spring Manga Guide that I did for Anime News Network last year. It was, what was it called? I don't know. It was one that starred Gajiel, so it was quite, it was a lot of fun to do it, though. It was like, oh, so this would be like if Gajiel were the main character.
Exactly as I always wanted. And he also at the end recommends a woodworking manga, which maybe I just haven't noticed these this recommendation before, but I'll definitely have to check that out.
Hana no Dechi.
Yeah, thank you for the questions there. No name here.
No signature.
But I believe the individual knows who they are. I said that way too insidiously. I think I know.
They know who they are.
I feel like
the one who suggested the woodworking manga knows who they are.
They know who they are.
Anyway. From now four. Dear Nick, well, they say girls can't ejaculate either, but guess what? And Chris sees Griff on the screen. Oh my gosh, Big Bro's alive! Screen chases to Lopez. And so is that gray guy who choked me until I passed out. That was hot. Red versus blue quotes. In an email I sent you guys way back, I said that I, Dio, was basically a perfect wrestling heel. I think I was wrong, though. Dio shouldn't be a wrestling heel. He should be the Vince McMahon of his own wrestling league. So, guys, in this Manga Wrestling League, I need you to pick at least 5 heroes and 5 villains, or 10 heroes and 10 villains if you want to sit on the question for a month, to be the heels in whatever heroes in wrestling are called in this league. They're called faces. However, you can only pick one hero and one villain from each manga series, but you can have multiple heroes and villains from the same series on the same tag team, which don't count towards the 5 or 10. Basically, name people to put in a wrestling league. So, a few years ago... I actually did an eFed using some of the WWE games and using custom characters from manga series. So I kind of did this already years ago. Let's see if I can remember.
EMW, wasn't it?
Yeah. I think that Kenshiro was basically the top face.
Wasn't Toriko the big face for a while?
Toriko was super over. Like, he never got any big championship wins or anything like that, but everyone loved the way that I wrote Toriko. Because he was just like this nice guy who would kick your ass, basically. He also specialized in table matches.
Like the Dudley Boys.
Yeah.
Oh, I get it, because cooking table. I get it!
Eating food on the table, yeah. Let's see, Chad also had a really, really big winning streak.
That's right, I forgot Chad was one of your first champions.
Let's see here. Piccolo did pretty well, I think. I made him a heel. he turned heel, basically. Hiruma was one.
You had Bato in there, didn't you?
Bato was one of the champions. He didn't hold on to it for very long. Hiro Yui from Gundam Wing was one of the first champions and had a fairly dominant early run too. And he turned heel after he lost during his title reign because he just became an arrogant asshole. I think he turned heel because he tapped out Toriko and everyone was like, fuck him! How dare he beat Toriko? But then Kenshiro held the title for like half a year or something like that. And then let's see, who are the villains? Hiruma was an arrogant heel. Crocodile was basically the top heel of the company. And then I had like one, there was one invasion by Giovanni who got like all the goober, jobber heels, and formed a faction with them as his own Team Rocket. So it was Neji from Naruto, Bandit Keith and Ryuk. And the dynamic was that Ryuk and Bandit Keith just made fun of Neji a whole lot because he sucked so much. And then when Team Rocket collapsed, they just decided to stay as a tag team, which I call Dead Man's Hand.
That's a pretty good one.
It ended with Frieza using the Ginyu Force to invade, and the very last episode was Jason Berter won the tag team titles. And then stuff happened. I got busy. I had other stuff to do, and eventually almost all of the characters got erased from my hard drive, and I didn't have a way of recovering them because they shut down the servers. So I would have basically had to start the whole thing over from scratch, and I was like, I think that this just best to leave it dead. So
what if we brought it back, Nick? Reboots are the big thing nowadays. Roseanne is one of the highest rated shows on television.
Yeah, that's going to last all right. It's one of those things where it's like, you know, never say never. In the same regard, it's like, you know, it's like, yeah, maybe I'll do Red Ride to Left again one day. But, you know, for right now, I cannot imagine myself being in a place where I would do it. But I definitely could, maybe one day.
There you go.
But that's the, I know I didn't quite exactly answer your question now for, but there you go.
All right. Question here from Jonah Bacon Lefkowitz. Greetings, Nick. You said you liked We Never Learn and then it got worse. And Chris, maybe I should say I hate World Trigger so it'll come back. He says he likes to offer help as our unofficial cooking correspondent, asking all of our Food Wars related curiosities. And apparently he'll make us honey mustard Pop-Tarts, so I'm going to keep going. question. Villains becoming heroes is a common trope of manga, though often it can fail either because the character's crimes were too great as a villain to be overlooked, or the character's turn to the good side makes them less interesting. What do you think is the ideal way to execute this story trope, and what are some of the best and worst examples of this trope that you can think of?
That's a difficult question to answer.
There are a lot of really good examples of it, I think, in some series out there. Like, One Piece, I think, has done a lot of these where a lot of sort of the bad guy's main crime is being aligned with a bigger bad guy. When you look at a character like Mr. Two, or say, like, Peckham's even, or, like, Kaku, where you're like, oh, this guy's not the worst. They're just aligned with someone far, far worse. And then those guys get the face turn. You're like, I can kind of understand this. Like, it's fine. And, sure, you know, they bond over friendship or whatever reason behind it. And then One Piece also kind of does this thing where most villains kind of get some moment of redemption where you're like, oh, these guys were maybe dreamers who have lost their ways or whatever. Those work really well. There are some where it doesn't work at all. Like, this is a spoiler to anybody who hasn't finished the season of Dragon Ball Super. But there's almost this moment of, like, big heroic, like, unity between Goku and Frieza to defeat Jiren. And you're like, Frieza's not a friend. Like, he's not a good guy. He murdered genocide universes
multiple times.
But, to be fair, everyone loves Vegeta. And he did blow up planets on the way to Earth for fun. Which is, you know, billions of lives probably lost in the wake of his conquest.
That wasn't canon.
It just kind of comes to that thing of what you're willing to kind of almost stomach. Cause I'm sure there are some people who are like, I can never forgive Vegeta for that. I hate him for it. And there are some people who are like, yeah, fuck it. Vegeta's a great dad now though.
Yeah, there are people who haven't forgiven Bakugo and all he did was bully one kid.
Yeah. I mean, look, there's some stuff where there's moments when it's right for a character and there's some people who do things that are obscenely awful where you're just like, I don't know why they're going for this and things like that. But I also am a huge fan of this trope. I think I mentioned before I used to play a game, Marvel Avengers Academy, which was like Marvel Character College, essentially. It was like essentially like a Simpsons Tapped Out kind of game. And all the characters were supposed to be like kids at this academy. And one of the big things, they used to have a whole bunch of villains be characters you could recruit. And people would be like, I don't want these characters like being like bad people on my campus. But they would always rewrite them to be good characters. So it'd be like Mysterio reflavored, and he's like, he just wants people to pay attention to him. And that's like his big thing. So when you get him as a good guy, he's like, I want to show everybody that I can be a hero for good. And I'm going to use my massive intellect to trick the intelligentsia and get plans from them. Or, you know, I may have been a soul-sucking vampire, but I'm going to use these powers for good now. But then there were some characters that they were like, no, these guys can never be redeemed. Like Carnage, they were like, no, he's just a bad guy. He'll never be a good guy you can recruit on campus because he's a fucking...
His name is Carnage.
He's a serial killer murderer. And that makes sense. Like, I get it for that. So, like, being able to twist it and make it so these heroes, like, are people who get their own redemptions, I like those. It's something I've always really dug. So I definitely dig it from those angles.
Mm-hmm. And I think that it's interesting to see the way that people react to redemption stories differently. Like, I thought when I was young and I read the Harry Potter stuff that, like, you know, the story of Snape was like heartbreaking and it's like, oh, he was a good guy all along. Yeah. But then some people are just, you know, now that I've gotten older, I've learned that some people are like, he abused his student. He was not a good guy.
Yeah.
He was horrible to kids for no reason and abuses a position of authority over them just to be a dick. He wasn't a good person. He just did one good thing for selfish reasons. So I understand that, and I think it's interesting to get different people's perspective on that. But there are some cases where I'm just kind of like, okay, you're not really being fair as well. So
it's something, too, where as we're kind of growing into a culture that is more and more kind of upfront with our feelings on our attitudes towards people, you're going to find
holding
more
people accountable for stuff, too.
And you're going to find more and more discrepancy between these sorts of things, you know? It's just people aren't always going to agree with who they're willing to allow to have sort of redemption or things like that. So it's an interesting topic. I don't know if we gave you the best answers for it, but I think we got some interesting conversation out of it.
Yeah.
Next question is a Power Rangers question. Who are your favorite and least favorite Rangers? A straightforward question, but like superheroes, I find what fans like and dislike about certain Rangers can tell a lot about the kind of person they are and what they most value in a heroic figure.
When I was a kid, my two favorites were Tommy and Billy. Billy's great. If we're talking very, very, very first Power Rangers series, then I guess that my least favorite was Trini, probably just because she, you know, was like the blandest one. Like, what do you remember about Trini, honestly? She's, you know,
yeah,
like, because it's like, okay, Jason's the leader. He's, you know, he's the tough guy, you know, does all the karate classes and stuff. Billy's the geeky one. Zach's the cool kid who does the hip hop Aikido. Kimberly is amazing and wonderful and everyone's first crush. And then just like, and then there's Trini. It's like, what did Trini do again?
I can't remember like if she had like a gimmick or anything to like that Billy was like the nerd. Did she have something? Was she like a photography student or
no? The way that Linkara would always put it whenever he did his recaps was that at the very least Trini's role was that she understood Billy when he got into his geeky ramblings and like understood him well enough that she could translate for everybody else. So she was kind of like a more
Like a nerd who social, was close.
Like, yeah, like a geek who was more less socially awkward.
Gotcha.
But yeah, was, I mean, like, and then if you get into like later seasons, then there are easier ones to pick from as well. Like, I don't remember anything about like almost any of the Power Rangers in space aside from Andross and Zane. So.
Yeah, I think so. I'll say my favorite is probably Billy originally, and then to name one from later that kind of carries off our last question was I really liked Sky from SPD because he was an egotistical, shitty guy who learned true humility, and because of it, you know, kind of earned his way to the title he thought he deserved at the beginning. And he grew and became a much more fully rounded character because of it. And they kind of bookend it really well where I remember him saying, like, I think the first episode they asked, like, oh, Sky, what would you think if I made Sid, I think her name was Sydney, the Pink Ranger at the time. What would you think if I made her number one? He's like, her? She's a girl. And then, ooh. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't great. But then the last episode, they ask him, like, what would you say if I made Sydney the Red Ranger, like the number one Ranger? And he's like, I would follow her orders exactly. And he's like, you just proved why you're now worthy of being like the Red Ranger finally, which was his dream as a kid. It's a very sweet sentiment. The character has some real solid character growth, and I really liked it and appreciated that he truly did understand what it meant to be a better person and leader out of, you know, having to be saddled with the Blue Ranger position and everything like that. So I like that a lot.
I've imagined like some like kind of Power Rangers stories in my head, and like kind of what each color represents. You know, like red is the leader, and you know, the second in command is like, you know, the green or the blue and all that stuff. And I kind of imagine like, you know, the way that you could use character dynamics to play off of those stuff. But Power Rangers doesn't really do that kind of thing in general.
Not as much. Red's the leader, and pink tends to be the girl. And
the girl. That was actually the story that I kind of imagined was like, what if you had like, you know, your main character be your like main character white everyday guy, but he ends up actually as the Pink Ranger because his personality is more suited to that.
That would be interesting. I can definitely see something coming out of that. And finally, I happen to be on a podcast where unintentionally we tend to have weekly arguments about the merits or lack thereof of harem series. I rarely get into them much, and I've often find that much of the good writing to be buried underneath an avalanche of tropes. While my colleagues make the compelling argument that it's a type of humor just like any other, i.e. subjective, and it really comes down to whether or not you find those tropes charming when executed properly. Where do you stand on this? As you've covered several on this podcast, and even more through recommendations, what makes or breaks a harem manga to you?
Yeah, it's interesting when you put it that way. Because that's basically accurate. You know, a harem series can be enjoyable if it's, you know, the right balance of, you know, humor, of character development, and actual, you know, appropriately done romance. I dislike harem manga in general, but not because of the concept, but because of the execution, where they're done that way so that you can make the main character bland and so that they can serve as an insert for the reader, so that they can be surrounded by a variety of hot, attractive young women with different personalities and body types so that you can get all your fetishes in. That seems to be the excuse for all of it. And there can be some ideas in there that are interesting, but because of the way the series plays out, that it just ends up still being awful. Like, I honestly think that there are some ideas in To Love Ru, for example, that could be pretty interesting. But because that series is so dead set on getting into panty shots and having the girls stumble into Rito and his hands somehow winding up underneath one or all layers of their clothes and just getting increasingly perverted as it goes along, it's still a trash series. Nisekoi is very much a harem series, but the characters are all fleshed out enough and do different things and end up growing over the course of the series that I can end up coming away from it liking it a lot better. And We Never Learn is kind of a collection of all of those traced together, and you can see what does and doesn't work by just the way that we talk about it. Like, I really dislike when a chapter is limited to jokes about one character's one personality trait. But if it goes into the developing relationship between Yuiga and one of the girls, one of them getting more in touch with their own feelings and stuff, that's where it gets more interesting.
I think the big thing for me when it comes to a harem series is what kind of protagonist is in it, because the series you're sort of explaining is the absolute worst kind of it, yeah, in my mind, when it's just, as you said, a bland, personalityless male lead who is an audience surrogate character for everyone to put themselves on. But we've read a lot of series that have moved away from that. Like, characters like Rocco and Yuiga have definitive personalities beyond just being a good guy. They have traits that sort of make them full characters and make an interesting story. But I think one thing to also consider is that harem isn't solely just the kind of series that we read. So something like Ouran Host Club, is in its way a harem manga. It's a series about
reverse
a bunch
harem
of guys.
Series. Yeah,
reverse harem series. And I like those sorts of series. Like, I think you could do these things in interesting ways. You know, Haru, I think, was her name in that, right?
Haruhi.
Where you're like, yeah, she's a really, like, fun and, like, engaging character, one you want to root for. So it's one of those series where if you can get the lead to be interesting, I don't really care how much of the series is fan service beyond that, as long as there's some restraint. I just want to make sure it's a fun, enjoyable series where the execution isn't just solely, like, let's have a bunch of titties and things like that. We read a lot of that when it comes to, like, Jump harem manga, simply because it's a series aimed for, you know, young boys, so it doesn't often go beyond what it needs to be, which is a shame. But there are better examples of that genre out there, you know. Maybe we just haven't read them all, or maybe just ones we haven't fully glimpsed. But I love the idea of a harem series in its concept, just because I like having a wide range of personalities and character types in a series, and that's usually a great way to get it. You're usually not going to have two characters who are too similar in a harem, because that would make the harem less interesting.
Yeah. And I do think that, I mean, when you say that you're on a podcast and you end up having these discussions, I totally get it. Because when it gets down to it, a harem is just kind of an excuse to have a web of different character interactions and use them for different effects. You can have them be for titillation, you can have them be for humor, or if it's really good, you can have them be for a mix of those along with actual character development and, you know, evoking different emotions and stuff. So you could have those same things in different types of character relationships beyond that. You know, it could just be like a single guy and a single girl could interact in those same ways. It's just that in general, you know, like Chris, like you said, we tend to kind of read the series because of the magazines that we read where they're done a certain way.
Yep.
I would actually be very happy if we had more harem series that were good, because that would just mean more good manga in general.
Yep.
All right, we'll do some stuff here from Andre Golden. Dear Y, the ruler of Return of the Jedi and Revenge of the Sith T. This is the third installment of Star Wars questions I have for you, so here we go. Number one, favorite quote from the prequel trilogy. For example, it's over Anakin, I have the high ground. I don't like sand, it's coarse and rough and irritating and it gets everywhere. And the classic, are you an angel? I think that my answer for this has changed over the years, because currently it's just do it. Because honestly, it's just because of a Game Grumps joke that my girlfriend and I quote at each other all the time. So,
there's always a bigger fish is one of my favorites. Cause you're like, true, I guess.
God. All right. That movie came out when we were like, what, 9, 10 or something like that. And looking at it, I was like, what a stupid line.
But like, yeah, you have to like look at that line in a vacuum. Or like, that was treated to be like an audience cheer moment line where you're just like, there is always a bigger fish. And you're just like, is there? I don't like pull a fish out of the water. I'm just like, there's a bigger one down there I could get. Like, it's not like a known fact. It's not like apples fall from the tree or something like that.
Have you ever read Darths and Droids?
Yes. That's yeah, I think
they
where
turn that
line
into summon bigger fish.
Like, that's such a great line of like, what? But as a kid, you're like, woo, bigger fish! That one had arms! And I'm like doing like the devil horns.
It was really there. More of an eel! Oh my god. All right, number two, who do you think is the worst character in the sequel trilogy?
So, sequel trilogy being our current trilogy?
Right. So, Force Awakens and Last Jedi.
I'm going to say Rose Tico.
Yeah.
The fact that she's still alive and she's just not a good character right now.
She starts off just fine and then she kind of sticks around.
Well, she like loses what even made her kind of interesting to start with. Like, oh, she's like a nervous kind of geeky fangirl. And then she loses.
The rebellion
that
takes all sorts.
And you're like, oh, wait, no, she's just like she's a super brave hero like everybody else. And you're like, that's
she has
brave.
Her convictions and wants to free all the slaves and wants and she stands up for what she believes. Maybe if you showed how she actually changed over the course of her adventure with Finn, then you could get into that.
Yeah.
But she just kind of flips a switch as soon as they leave.
Yeah.
So.
It would be cool if we saw more of that kind of fangirlish, geeky personality in those moments, and I could have probably swallowed it more, but she really just doesn't have that after the first scene. It's almost like someone different wrote that first scene.
Yeah. Which is entirely possible the way the movies are done.
Yeah. And outside of that, I would say probably maybe Holdo, I guess. I don't have as big of an issue with Holdo as everyone else does. I agree her plan was stupid, but I don't have a huge issue with it. I don't know. It's kind of tough. I like most of the characters they have. Like, my brother hates who's the fucking First Order guy?
Hux?
Yeah, he hates Hux. And I love Hux.
What's wrong with Hux? He's an asshole general on the villains.
my brother's like, the Empire would never have let a general of his incompetence hang around like this. This is ridiculous. Vader would choke out a single general for the slightest misstep, and Hux is over here sliding around on stage. And I'm like, God, fuck off.
Vader choked out those generals because he was really pissed off over his wanting to grab Luke, and they kept on messing things up when he was desperate to do that. So, number three, which Star Wars character should get their own spinoff movie, including characters from animated series, novels, comics, and video games?
No, you should have stopped. You shouldn't have given us, like, novels, comics, game. That's so much. Because I'm like, Jolly Bindo. I'm trying to think of all the various characters from Knights of Krea. Zuckus and
Forlom.
Yeah, I'm like going through every fucking, like, side game and shit like that. I'm like, Kylo Ren. Kyle Katarn, I think was his name. Like,
Kyle Katarn is awesome.
Yeah. Like, you
I don't know so why many. He became a Jedi, but he was awesome in Dark Forces. Yeah.
You could have so many that it's impossible to really, like, nail down just one. So I'm just
Kyle gonna... Katarn beat a beast in Jabba's pit to death with his bare fists.
That's pretty dope.
It's what happens. You have to fight this dragon thing and you have to beat it with just your bare hands because he's taken all your weapons from you.
That's dope.
It's awesome.
I'm going to go with outside, not outside stuff, and just within the movies. And this isn't just because I'm a huge Liam Neeson fan, but I would like to see a movie that covered more of like what Qui-Gon Jinn was like before that movie, because we don't get a lot of Qui-Gon Jinn, and I would really kind of would like to see what that relationship was like between him and Obi-Wan. It's very difficult to do now because you couldn't do Liam Neeson now as a younger Qui-Gon Jinn like you would need to, and he obviously dies in that movie, so you couldn't really do anything there. But I would like to see what kind of person Qui-Gon was before that, you know, just kind of discover that, because we've seen
why the kind of person that he is, that he made this kind of very, very loose canon decision to bring this child into the Order.
Yeah, and we've seen sort of other characters. Like, we already know kind of what Obi-Wan Kenobi's like because he's been in several movies and he's going to have his own spinoff. We already kind of have an idea on, like, Mace Windu, but we don't have anything really on Qui-Gon. I would like to see more from him.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to actually cite a novel that I read when I was younger called Darth Maul Shadowhunter, which is kind of this story that sort of justifies the existence and purported badassery of Darth Maul.
Okay.
Which is essentially that there are these people on Coruscant who have learned of the Trade Federation blockade plans and everything like that, and what they're going to do on Naboo, and Darth Maul is sent to find them, retrieve the, like, data crystal or whatever that has this information on, and kill them. And the whole book is about this chase through, like, the underground of Coruscant as he's going after them and stuff. So it'd be this kind of, kind of Terminator 1-esque kind of story of this unstoppable guy coming after them. Okay. And it does end with him just fucking killing them because they actually made the main character, basically the protagonist, manages to get into this meeting of a bunch of politicians, and it's like, oh, here, take the data crystal. It's got this important information. And he hands it over to Senator Palpatine.
Oh, that sucks. Yeah.
Good little twist, though. So I think that would actually make work out as a really as a good movie. So, or maybe, you know, an hour special or something.
We could dig that. Yeah.
And question four, favorite Star Wars video game.
I'm going to say, seriously, I'm going to quickly say Knights of the Old Republic, the original one, is my favorite. But I will say that I have come to appreciate Knights of the Old Republic 2 in a very different level than I used to as a kid. It was the redheaded stepchild of the two when I was younger, because the fact that it was missing so much endgame content that the ending was terrible. It made no sense. It kind of came out of nowhere. But I watched somebody who explained, it was like a 3-hour long fucking video.
Jesus.
That explained the philosophy of Kreia in that game. And it is not a philosophy for everybody. And it's not even one I subscribe to necessarily myself, but it's one I found interesting to watch, which is this idea of like the light and the dark side being both kind of forces that create problems in the world, and the way that the game kind of was trying to teach you to look beyond them while using them to your own benefit. So like you go to a planet called Nar Shaddaa early on, and or not early on, but like as soon as you get there, you're faced with like a beggar man who asks you for money, and you could choose either the light side to give him money or the dark side, which is to be like, fuck off. And no matter which one you pick, Kreia will like talk to you afterwards, and she's like, why did you do that? You know, if you pick the light side option, she's like, you gave this man money with nothing, and now he will not learn how to get stronger, and people will take what he has.
You didn't teach him how to fish.
And if you take the evil option, she's like, why did you do that? By treating him so cruelly, he will spread that cruelty to others for no reason. You could have said no and perpetuated a less violent cycle as a result. It's over the top in some points, but it creates a very interesting sequel to the first one, which is a much more straightforward, like, the light side is the good guy, heroic adventure story to this one, which is a lot more, like, kind of critical thing. Again, I don't necessarily completely agree with the philosophy behind everything in there, but it is a lot more of an interesting story than I gave it credit for when I was younger playing it and maybe not picking up on all the nuance. I was just angry that Kreia kept fucking yelling at me for everything.
Stop being mean to me!
She really is a great character to, like, enjoy her for constantly being like, why are you doing that? You know nothing. You're just like, stop doing this! I just wanted the +2 to strength! I didn't realize there was a greater wisdom behind not taking the +2 to strength! I don't know!
My favorite video game, gonna just be old school and say Dark Forces. I played that a lot as a kid.
Dig it.
All right.
We're gonna have to make this the last one because my voice is starting to go here.
All right, you got it.
Question from Andre Golden. Dear Ginger Grant, the ruler of time, and Marianne Summers Tea. Why did we stop on this one? Ruby is well known for its cool fight scenes, and my question is, what is your favorite Ruby fight? P.S. Do you think Kaito Sentai Lupin Ranger versus Kaisatsu Sentai Pot Ranger looks awesome?
Looking at the posters here, it does look pretty cool. As for the Ruby one, I don't know, when Yang broke into Junior's club.
That's my favorite. I love that fight against Junior. It was such a great... I don't remember if they fought Junior or if he was just there, but that's my favorite scene from Ruby.
All right, everybody. That was On that note, thank you guys for sending in your questions. We really appreciate it. If you want us to answer your question on the next Q&A episode, we probably won't at this point because we are still a couple of months behind, but we are slowly closing the gap. So you should keep on sending your questions in. Send them to weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com. And be sure to include your name and the signature if you want us to give you a shout out and say who sent us in the question. We will be back next week with our regular episode at the usual time on Thursday. And that's about it.
Goodbye, everybody.